So this is Claire Coyne. I am near Guildford recording Sandra and Eric Morgan on the 29th of September 2014 for the Temple of Mithras Oral History Project. So I'll start with you, Sandra, if that's okay. Could you just give me your full name and your year of birth?
Mrs. Sandra Morgan, born the 17th of May, 1932.
And what school did you go to?
Harrowweald Grammar.
And could you just tell me in one sentence what your mum and dad did during their adult lives for work?
My mother was a bank clerk, and my father was a carpenter, and he built the tube trains at Golders Green.
And I'll go over to you now, Eric. If you could give me your full name and your date of birth.
My name is Eric Morgan. My date of birth is 19th of July, 1931.
And which school did you go to?
I went to the Regent Street Polytechnic in London.
And what did you, how were your mum and dad occupied during their working lives?
And my father was a printer and worked for the stationery office for the government, and my mother was a housewife bringing up two children.
Okay, thank you. So I'll start with you. Is it okay to call you Sandra?
Yes,
I've
of
been very
course.
gung-ho using your first names. You sent us such a lovely, well, I read some wonderful words about what you described about your visit to the Temple of Mithras. So if we just go straight to your impression that stands out most from your Temple of Mithras visit, what would you say?
Well, first of all, I went on the Thursday to see what the situation was like. And I found a huge queue. So I rang up my then boyfriend and told him. And we decided that we would go up to London and go to a newsreel. So we went into one of these little newsreel places. And they were showing all about the Roman temple on this newsreel. So that made us even keener, I think. But on Saturday, after I'd finished work at the Bank of England, Eric met me and we came up again and we queued for 2.25 hours. I looked up the times in my diary and walking all around before we got in to walk all the way around. But it was fantastic. I mean, we've been to other places like the St. Albans and those type of places, but this was, you know, living history, seeing these people busily scrubbing away and trying to get the bits. So that was really, I we found it marvellous, and we've always been interested in history, and you know, we go all sorts of places and for historical things, not necessarily Roman, but all sorts of things. So, but it's always been a passion with us, history, both of us really.
Well, I mean, I'm really excited to hear more because that's such a lovely introduction. But I was wondering, would you mind? I know you said there isn't loads in your diary entry, but I was wondering if you might read anything that's relevant from your diary. It'd be great to have it in your voice and with the full dates as well, if you don't mind.
No, of course not. On September the 23rd, 1954, I put in that I had a look at the queue for the Roman temple and it was terrific. I phoned Eric and told him so. Then I had a look round town. I bought a birthday card. Then I met Eric and we couldn't get into the temple at all. So we came back up and after tea we went and had a look at the cartoons and the temple and on a newsreel. So then on the Saturday after I'd finished work, we returned again, and I'm trying to find it now.
So
Saturday.
this is Saturday the
This
25th.
is Saturday the 25th, and we went again and stood outside the Roman Temple in Queen Victoria Street, and we queued for 2.25 hours before we got in, but it was worthwhile. And after that, we went to the cinema and saw Robert Taylor in King Arthur and the Round Table. So that tells you how long ago it was.
Sounds like a lovely day. Okay, I'll come back to you in a
Yeah.
second. So, Eric, if I could ask you the same question, what would you say was your sort of outstanding impression of your visit to the temple?
Well, I think this was all new to us, really. The war hadn't been over 9 years. Building hadn't really taken place apart from power stations and industry and that, so that when this started being developed, and we knew the site in London very well, when this started to be developed, it was exciting. We were looking forward to the future, and it was just exciting to, that something in London had been found, and we wanted to go and see it. And to say, I think the long time it took to the queue was, by the time we got there, I think we'd seen most of the site because we'd been going in the queue past it, and of course it was deep down, so you looked down on the site as you went there. But it was amazing there, and you know, it's sort of stuck in my mind ever since. So it's something. Many other sites we've been to, but I don't think I've remembered them like I have the Mithras one.
Oh, that's lovely. And Sandra mentioned that you came, or she described it as you came up to London, I think, to see the temple. So where were you living at the time?
I was... do you want the whole history? Yeah, the whole history. Yeah.
Let's go for it.
You can always edit it out if you've got too much, isn't it? Yeah, I was working in London. No, that doesn't help, does it? No. Anyhow, just to jump to that, at the time I was working in Leatherhead, and I used to come up on. I'd done a degree part time, going to Chelsea College, and I'd obtained my degree in the summer, and I was really waiting to go be called up to go into the forces. But I was working at Leatherhead, and I came up, and you were working at the Bank of England. So I came up on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings by train, and we met in London, didn't we?
So you came up from Leatherhead?
So I came up from Leatherhead, yeah. And I was at home at the weekend, so I knew I was down at Leatherhead at the weekend. And
what did you go on to do as your work during your working life?
I was working in research at the electricity board at Leatherhead.
So you were obviously very keen, because you had a look on the Thursday to see if you could get in, and then you came back on the Saturday. You said you'd always had an interest in history. Can you remember what started your interest in history and archaeology?
Well, in Roman history, it was my grandfather. I used to go to Bristol, which is where all my family came from. I'm the only one born outside of Bristol. And he used to take me around the Roman walls in Bristol, and they were all there. I mean, it's incredible. You can see all the Roman walls. So I've always been interested in, and he was fantastic as a grandfather, interesting you in everything from Victorian history, because he saw Queen Victoria driving by in her coach in about 1897. So, you know, you go back sort of three centuries, really, in this information. And so he's always sparked it off in me. He's this wonderful old chap. And so I've never sort of kept going. And when we've gone abroad, we've gone to places where we could, like Pompeii, haven't we, and Herculaneum, all places we can see this type of thing. It's an incredible.
Yeah, I mean, as a child, well, particularly during the war, everyone used to go walking. That was the main relaxation, main leisure thing. And you walk across a field and you pass a church, and churches were always open. And we went into them and got a real feel for the history and that of everything. And we didn't live too far from St Albans, so that was great. The cathedral and the amphitheatre at St Albans, fantastic things to for a youngster to go and see. You know, trapdoors in the cathedral. I remember now that Father opened the door and it led, some steps led down to some tombs down below, and all these sort of exciting things. So yes, I think one got a real feel for the history. And then the week after we went to the Mithras, we went back on the Saturday, following the Roman wall, didn't we? Following the wall around London. So we got quite excited about it all.
So I'm interested if you're able to say a little bit about a little bit more about of all the places you've seen, that the Temple of Mithras seems to have stuck in your mind more than anything else. Are you able to elaborate on that at all?
Well, I think it was the first sort of, certainly the first sort of excavations that I'd seen. As I say, we gradually wandered down to the site, and because there was such a short time for the excavation, people were working like mad, and no one really was being able to tell us anything much about what was going on. But there was a lot of activity with people just gradually sifting the soil and that. So it was my first real encounter with archaeology, as it was, and it was just London, and just one liked to be just part of it. It was just great.
And on that note about being part of it, you know, as we've been preparing for this project, we've thought a lot about the numbers of people that went to visit the site, because what was expected was a few hundred people over the 2 weeks, but in fact, as you probably know, there was a few hundred thousand, yeah, 300,000 or 400,000. Yeah. So I just wondered if you'd got any thoughts on why you think, I mean, I suppose you've touched on it for yourself already, but do you think that those were the same reasons why it really captivated the public imagination, or is there anything else you'd like to say about that?
Well, I think Eric is right, actually. It was the first time I'd seen an excavation. Used to see it occasionally, or hear about it on the radio, because we didn't have television very much in those days. We got an old second-hand set, but we didn't get that until we'd been married several years, did we? So television was not a thing we really watched. And so seeing this one, and the men so enthusiastically and carefully digging all these bits out, it was just fantastic. I mean, it was to see them, the care they were doing with it, and the enthusiasm. I think that's what brought it alive. But Eric's right, we did walk round the following Saturday all down the wall at Moorgate, and you know, and I don't know if that's still there now, whether they covered that up too, but certainly, you see, at that time, you have to remember, as Eric said, the war hadn't long been over. I started in 1948 at the Bank of England, and everywhere was just bomb sites with bay willow herb and buddleias growing everywhere. It was quite colourful, actually, more colourful than it is now. And because it was so beautiful, all these plants growing everywhere. And it was just an exciting place to be, London. I was born in London, at Tooting. And so, sort of, I'm a Londoner born. So London, for me, is lovely. I mean, I've always loved it. But that particular day, going round that and seeing it all happening and realising it had happened so long ago. These people were there building, and under London, there must be a whole mass more of these things that they can never get at. It's just magical.
And sorry, was there anything you wanted to say?
Well, I was just going to say what I said earlier, really, that, you know, we come through the war. It's only 9 years earlier. Rationing had only stopped the previous year. We'd had the Queen's coronation, we'd had Hilary and Tenzing up to Everest. We were getting excited, I think. You know, the country, the mood in the country was we're moving forwards. And I think when this turned up, it was just part of it all, that we were moving back into the future.
That sounds lovely. And thinking of the numbers of the people who queued, do you remember talking to anybody in the queues?
No, I don't. No. But I do know somebody else who went, and I said about this, and he said, oh, no, don't want to do that.
Oh, that's a shame. Well, if he changes his mind, you know where to find us.
Well, yes, he's actually, I suppose, about 7 or 8 years younger than us. He must have gone as a child, I think, with his parents probably to see it. So perhaps his memories are not as strong as ours are. It could be that, I don't know. But I don't remember talking to anybody there, do you? I mean, we may have done. Well, I'm very chatty, so it's very likely, but I don't remember anybody.
I don't think we did. No. I mean, we queued up outside, and because you got the hoarding there, we queued up there and we gradually moved forwards. But once you're inside, oh, it was, I mean, the sight was down here and we were up here, and you're bouncing off stones and bits all the way down there. You know, I don't know that we, you know, you kept on your stone and the other people on theirs. I mean, we must have thought it was worthwhile to be 2 1/4 hours.
Do you remember anything about, because you've both mentioned watching the men working away, scraping away, and doing a bit of digging.
Mm.
Do you remember any opportunities to dig yourselves or for the public to dig at all?
But there?
Yeah.
Not there, no.
No, there was no opportunity for that.
I don't remember it. Don't. I mean, everything was on the wireless, of course. So, apart from the movie, I mean, the Patho or Movie Tone, I don't know which newsreel we saw it on. But.
And can you remember if you were
Patho?
You were queuing for that long. Can you remember anything about the weather?
Sorry.
Can you remember anything about the weather?
Well, I think it must have been pretty dry. I don't remember having an umbrella.
I think it was a dull day, but it was dry.
Yeah. It certainly didn't say that in my diary. I got soaked or anything. I think it would have done. But no, it's... you say about, had we ever done the archaeology? Well, we haven't. But when our son grew to be about 14, there was a dig going on at the Guildford Museum. And he took part in that. So, you know, we inspired him to want to do it. And of course, he went to work for the Museum of London. So somehow we bred historians in our family. He only dug up a dead sheep, mind you.
Well, at least he dug up something.
Well, he did.
I mean, for a 14-year-old boy, that was probably quite interesting at the time.
Well, he was. He came home fascinated.
And what did he go on to do at the Museum of London?
Well, he worked there for a while in the photography department, didn't he?
He
went on eventually to do other things with computers. He works for a firm and trains people to use computers because he couldn't think that there was much he could do or progress into the Museum of London. So he did go to work for a small museum after that, but then he changed tack completely and did something else. He's 50 now, you see, so he's set in his own career now.
Yeah, sure.
But he's still passionately fond of history as we are.
Golly. And have you ever joined any societies or groups or anything like that?
We used to go to a history one, didn't we, of New 3A, didn't
well,
we?
I was a guide for Guildford for 30 years. I was a guide at the cathedral for 30 years. I'm editor of the Friends of the Guildford Museum magazine, and you know, we go to a few history lectures if that's what you meant.
Absolutely. You sound very keen indeed, very enthusiastic.
Very keen. I've been a parish councillor for 46 years, so my interest went in another tack, keeping this place looking as beautiful as it is.
And it does look very beautiful.
It is. It's a lovely place to live.
Yeah. Well, I've got some photos, so now seems like a good time to have a little look through those. Just if there's anything else that comes up for you as you look at these pictures?
If we'd known 60 years ago that you'd want this information, we would have taken more interest.
If I'd have known. Now, that would be a challenge. Okay, so that was in the Daily Mail 2 days after you went, Monday the 27th.
Oh, yes, it looks just the same to keep. It's fascinating. I always think what is so fascinating is the clothes, you know, of the period. We're all wearing their macs, and a lot of the men are wearing trilbies. It's fascinating, isn't it? Patiently they waited as the queue moved slowly on. 35,000 people were there yesterday. Yes. I can't remember what is opposite. Sometimes they left a little piece, didn't they? Like a miniature piece of it. The other side of the road, I thought. Yeah.
Well, actually, that's something that is useful for me to ask you, because what they did in the end was they moved the temple to a completely different site. Yeah. Did you ever go and visit it in its new location?
No, we don't think we ever did we?
I did, but...
Did you?
Yes. When I was working at Brunswick Wharf, I used to get the bus from the bank, and I went to... I walked past it, and I just... And it was just tucked on the building there. I was very disappointed. I really was. I was just, you know, I looked at this. I thought, this wasn't what I saw. I thought anyone could have put those stones around there. But all the excitement seemed to have vanished from that. Whereas, of course, you've got in the Museum of London, you've got the remains of that other building underneath it, which is a fantastic way to display it.
Yeah, and actually, one of the reasons we're doing this project is because Bloomberg are now building on the same site that you visited 60 years ago, and they will re-site the temple in its actual position. And there will be an exhibition space, and it will be at the correct level, the correct ground level.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so you'll be able to see it back in situ, and I think it'll be very nicely done. So
lovely to see the men who wear ties.
Yes, things are very different now.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing any artifacts there as such. I must admit I was hoping to see the Mithras head, but I'm sure it wasn't there.
No, it probably would have gone by then.
Yeah.
They would have taken it away for safekeeping, I suspect, wouldn't they? Because it's the sort of thing that would sell fairly well if somebody'd stolen it.
Mm. We heard from somebody whose great uncle was the builder who found the head of Mithras.
Oh, fantastic.
Really lovely. So, there we go, talking about the head. That's Professor Grimes with David Eccles, the Minister of Works. Yeah. And they're both very excited, I think.
Not surprised. I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I remember those pictures of Grimes.
Had been all these years. Is it in the Museum of London?
Yeah.
So we must have seen it when we've gone to the Museum of London, mustn't we?
Yes, I don't remember us particularly looking for it so much at the...
That's the temple itself.
Because that's nicely cleaned up, you know, from what we saw as yeah. we were walking around, and that no.
All the ladies in their hats, and it's a piece of history, isn't it? A piece of time, not just this, but I mean the people themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a lovely one on that note. And this is the picture that I think got the whole mood for the public going, because yeah. this was in the Sunday papers, and it was from that everybody seemed to get on board. It's a lovely yeah. picture.
It is. It's an amazing picture, isn't it?
And that was before they'd officially opened it up to the public.
Yeah.
So that's how come they're so close to everything, right in the thick of it.
Yeah. Mind you, I don't think we could get down anywhere like that now, Eric. You'd probably fall flat as we went down.
Well, I don't know, we'd have a go.
That one's not so clear. There's a picture on the back as well.
Got the crane here.
Here were a few artifacts that were found, but obviously there's been a lot more since then.
Amazing is how much of it is still there when you go and see these, like the Colosseum in Rome and the theatre at St Albans, the amphitheatre there. You know, it's a, they built well, the Romans, didn't they? Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it?
And
it looks like some dice there, does it, or not?
I like this one, Mr. Locke, Mithras Temple Finds.
Well, what's interesting about that is that we were sent that with a letter and what looks like a ticket, which is why I was asking you if you knew of any opportunity to dig there, because this ticket was issued by Humphreys, who you can see in your own photos, that there was a little stall there.
Yes. Yeah.
And then this letter suggests that at some point some people were able to dig and they purchased a ticket to do that.
Yeah.
But nobody else knows anything about it, so we were obviously hoping to shed any light on it that we can. So the person who sent the letter and the picture in, the ticket, sorry, says, Wallace and I have taken the day off, and this is where we went on page 5. So I think there was a newspaper clipping as well. I think that's in here. It was wonderful. One has to get a ticket from Humphreys of Knightsbridge, so we did this and got one for you too, because they say today is the last day, so do go along. Ask the man if you might keep the ticket for school use, please. We found bones and a tooth, which is what you've just looked at.
Ah.
So, but this is the only information so far we've had about digging.
You think that's for digging, do you?
Well, it seems to...
I don't think it's just a... You know, just a jump the queue sort of ticket.
I don't think they did that in those days, did they? Everybody was much nicer to each other. I know they do it now, but...
Because when we used to go to theatre, you used to buy a little stool and you pay sixpence for this stall and sit on it so that you would be at the front of the queue and you could go off and get a meal, and everybody who hadn't got a stall had to queue at the back. And you came back and sat on your little stool and you were first in the queue.
Oh, right, so I'm completely wrong then. So you could do it in those days.
Yes. I was doing that from 1948 onwards.
Yeah,
so
that was very common. Yeah. We did that all the time.
Boy, were those stools uncomfortable.
Well, you weren't there most of the time, by the sounds of it. You were in a restaurant.
I mean, you see down the you can still see down the side of some of the theatres around Trafalgar Square and that. An awning out over the pavement, and the stools were underneath them.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. Well, these, they're a bit more wordy, so you're welcome to have a look at them, but they might take a little while to read.
This statue. Seraphis.
Oh dear. We didn't put much money in.
Can you remember anything about that?
Do you remember putting any money in the collecting box or something? I
don't remember that. We didn't have a lot of money, so we probably wouldn't have put any in anyway. I was earning £3.50 a week. He was only earning £2.50 a week.
Oh, well, I thought I might, before I go, I thought I might ask you a little bit more, because for us, it's lovely to meet a couple that went to the site together and who are still together, you know. Or I don't mean still together, still around together. Anyway, I better backtrack. This is not coming out right.
I know what you mean.
So if you could just maybe repeat a couple of things you said when I came in before we started recording about how long you've known each other and when you got married, that would be lovely.
Yeah. Well, we met, I think, partly because my mother said to me, you are going to work in a bank and there'll be a lot of females. You better join a youth club or she won't meet any young men. I don't know what Eric's mother said to him, but he joined the church youth club that I was going to. Now, I didn't go to church at that time. My parents were not... His parents did. So the first thing he said to me, you know, when we met at this youth club, is, would you like to come to church with me? So I started going to church with him and his parents. And it sort of worked in from there. So we met, I was 16, he was 17. And
so this was 1948.
Yeah, I was 16 in 1948, yeah, so about that time. We met in the autumn because I'd left school and I, you know, that's what my mother said, so I went and joined this club. And it was very nice, you know, just a church youth club, games, table tennis, you know, all that sort of thing. But then we discovered, you see, because I started playing the piano up there, and he sang. We neither of us do a great deal of it now, but he needed a pianist because his mother was playing for him, you see, and I needed a singer to sing with my piano. So that was another interest we had in common. And, of course, over the years, we've done a lot of concerts for old people's homes, me playing and him singing. But we had to wait till 1957 before we could get married, because he had to do his degree. He was down in Leatherhead, coming home, but, you know, he was based there. Then he had 2 years in the RAF to do. And finally, in June 1957, we actually got married. And we've been together in this house ever since.
Since 1957? When was this house built?
1957. So it was brand new when we moved in. We watched it going up. It was about halfway up when we saw it, wasn't it? Yeah. So we did the mortgage, you know. And Eric liked it because it had a big garden, you see. It's a nice long garden at the back. I was a bit worried about it because I thought, when I'm 82, am I going to be able to cope with this? But we have a marvellous daughter-in-law who does the garden now.
Perfect. So it all worked out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how we met, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
So you said you were born in Tooting.
Yes.
So you're a London girl.
Yes.
And where were you born, Eric?
I was born at Wealdstone, which is very near Harrow in North London.
Okay, so you're both sort of in the London,
London area. Yeah, I never... never lived farther away from London than this is the farthest I've ever lived from London. He was born in the front bedroom, weren't you? It was deliberate.
Yes, I imagine. Yeah.
Planned.
So something I didn't understand was you said you were in Leatherhead a lot, but you used to go home. Is that right?
Yes. I went home at the weekends.
And that was Harrow, was it?
Harrow. Mm-hmm. And I went down, came down the train on Monday morning to Leatherhead. Friday, I had a class at Chelsea, but I went home after the class. Got home about 10 o'clock. Back to Wilson at 10 o'clock. And then, I had a class, as I say, on, this is when I was doing the degree, I had a class on Friday, and used to study all Saturday morning, all Sunday morning. And we go out Saturday afternoon and Sunday, wouldn't we?
I would take my knitting down, and my future mother-in-law, she was lovely, your mother, wasn't she? Always made me welcome. And we'd sit and chat in the other room while he was studying, your mother. And then we'd go and play the piano, wouldn't we? And your mum would keep popping in to make sure we weren't up to anything we shouldn't be up. She always had an excuse
for coming,
but she was charming. She was a real Victorian lady, and she was lovely, absolutely lovely. I really got on well with her, didn't I? Because my mother had died when I was 17, so I didn't really have a female. I was an only child. And so it was lovely to meet Eric's mother because she was so delightful and was so welcoming, and it was really lovely.
That sounds gorgeous. What a wonderful story.
Yeah.
How lovely.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I knew Sandra's mother for about a year before she died. Right.
Yes. Which is nice, isn't it, to have that kind of connection.
Yes.
So you mentioned you don't really play the piano so much anymore?
Well, yes, I do play the piano, yes. We don't do the concerts now. We do talks. I mean, I talk on being a magistrate and we're going to a royal garden party and daft things that happened on holiday.
You've got the picture of us all on the stage down here, have you?
It's not
easily accessible, no.
My youngest, when she was about five.
We had three children, and when she was five, we started this little group, mainly because the Sandra's WI was entertaining old people, and they wanted some entertainment. And I'd always wanted to, had this mad idea of wanting to go on the stage. So we did some songs and things, and Candice at five sang "I'm a Long-Haired Lover," didn't she? Sang it, she shouted it out at the top of her voice, and she insisted on having a microphone, so we gave her a microphone which wasn't connected to anything. Her voice was that loud.
So we did that until they started going off to university and everything. And then we branched out on our own, didn't we?
Yeah, we did it
on our own after that.
We only stopped a couple of years, two or three years ago, didn't we?
Well, yeah. We do the talks, but the musical ones were getting a bit of a problem because the amplifier was so heavy, Eric was trying to get a trouble getting it around, so we decided we wouldn't do those anymore.
And you with your inhaler and that, your voice wasn't as good as it was.
I've got asthma, In a word, getting older.
No. I can't entertain that idea for a minute.
Well, we're a bit older than we were when we went to Mithras.
Well, I think we're probably almost ready to round up. So coming back to Mithras, actually, just be nice. I mean, you've said some really beautifully evocative things about what it meant to you. And you've also mentioned about how your son got you know, developed an interest in history and archaeology. But I wondered if you were just able to sum up again what you would pass on to a young person if they were sitting in this room with us and about why history or archaeology is meaningful and important.
Well, I think that history, we are where we came from. And if you don't get interested in history, how do you know how things have happened and gone over? I mean, I read the parish council minutes, which go back to 1894, and everything comes in cycles. And history is the same. You get the Romans, and then you get the Middle Ages, and everything sort of progresses in cycles. And it's just so interesting to read up about it. We've got loads of history books we read, and it's just you look to the future. You want your children to know what happened in the past so that they can go to the future and know all about it and then take it on to their children, you hope. So that's the reason I've always been very keen on it.
Eric, have you
yes, I would agree there. I mean, we learn from the past. The past is so important to us, you know, to go on into the future. We don't want to make the mistakes of the past. We need to move forward all the time. And the construction and ideas, the fire breaks and everything that have been done over the years are so important for the future.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anything else that you would like to add that we haven't talked about or anything that's just sprung to mind?
No, I didn't think so. I think you explored us very thoroughly.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
I hope you got what you wanted. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
I don't feel we've added much to you, but
we couldn't tell you a great deal because, you know, 60 years is a long time, isn't it? And we've seen so much since that. You know, travelling. We travelled abroad every year, sometimes twice a year. Once the children were up and gone, we started, you know. But we did three trips before we had the children in the 50s. And they were, I think, the more interesting ones because Tunisia was as it was in the Bible. You know, and we went to Yugoslavia. That was when it was all together. You know, Diocletian's Palace is still there and all these places.
We went to Sardinia.
I don't know
how we ever survived after Sardinia. We went on one trip in Sardinia, across the island. In those days, there was just about 30 of us in a group, and we changed every fortnight, so another 30 came in, that's all there was. We went on this coach across the island, and we went into the bandit country, didn't we?
Nuoro.
Yeah, that's right, Nuoro is the chief town there. We went there, and everyone ignored us, and then we went into, the coach then went into towns of no one in the town. And on the wall was a whole list of names, and about three quarters of them had been crossed off. Everyone who'd been crossed off had been assassinated.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I've heard that Sardinia had a pretty rough reputation for a long time, but I didn't realise it was quite that bad.
And the guide just said, "Oh, you don't have to worry about them. They know that we come across here once a fortnight." We passed three Italian soldiers who were walking along the road, and they stopped the coach and they said, "Have we seen anything? Because someone had been shot in the night nearby."
Goodness me.
And those three were really exciting.
Quite hard to top that, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, that was very, very good, that was, wasn't it? And as I say, Tunisia. We were very lucky in Tunisia. Yeah. We went to Hammamet, which is the main seaside resort there. We were the only complete hotel. They were building another one next to it. And it was 2 miles to Hammamet. And on two or three occasions, we just at the desk, you said, "We'd like a camel tomorrow." And one of the farmers from the field would bring his camel. He usually brought two camels and two donkeys. And we go along the beach down to Hammamet. Now I understand it's just solid hotels all the way.
Probably. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well,
the camel a carrot, as a reward. The chap was horrified. Wasting a carrot on a camel. Oh, poor camel.
No, we were very lucky. Really.
We have. We've had a very exciting life, really, haven't we?
Very lucky.
Been to two garden parties, done all sorts of things, haven't we?
Well, thank you so much.